Hello and welcome back to the Elemental Evan podcast. This is your host, Evan Roberts. And on this show, I break down health topics from a holistic and simplified perspective to give you tools after every single episode that you can actually apply to your life and hopefully improve your health and wellness for the better. On today's episode, I am joined by Julia Blackwell. She is a fascia release practitioner, educator, and creator of the Fascia Remedy. And overall, she is just a very knowledgeable person in the fascia realm. She's been working with clients for years now, and she really knows how to get into the fascia and not only to release and lubricate and lengthen this fascia, but rather to also help release some stored trauma, which is a very interesting topic that I have been personally interested in covering for a couple years now. So really happy to have Julia on this show. Today, we are going to cover what the heck fascia even is, because it can be kind of a weird topic unless you've been in anatomy and physiology or maybe dissected an animal and you saw it kind of coating all of the muscles. But nonetheless, we're going to cover what fascia is, why it's important, why it gets tough, dense, and restricted and hard to move, how we can go ahead and loosen all of that up and, you know, get some lubrication in there. And once again, as well, release some of that stored trauma that can actually accumulate in our fascia, which is absolutely wild and a really cool topic to get into. So without further ado, I know you guys are all going to absolutely love Julia. She has some incredible health and wellness knowledge, especially when it comes to fascia, and it was an absolute pleasure to have her on the show. So let's go ahead and get into today's episode. Here is Julia Blackwell. Hey, Julia, welcome to the show.
Hey, Evan, how's it going?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much for joining me today. I'm just going to jump right into it. Let's start at the bird's eye view. Like, what is fascia?
Oh, yeah, we are just diving right in. Okay. Well, fascia, it's also the connective tissue that you have in your body. It is the biological fabric that organizes all of the water and material in your body. So one of my favorite analogies is that it's like plastic wrap that wraps around every single thing we have. So every muscle fibril, multiple of those make up one muscle fiber, and fascia wraps around that. It wraps around every muscle group, every bone, nerve, ligament, tendon, blood vessel, organ. Have I said them all yet? It's around everything in your body. So without it, we would go tumbling to the ground in a pile of bone fragments and goo. So this is one uninterrupted, interconnected system that functions like a unit. And of course, it's not only imperative for our posture and our shape and our structure because of that organization of all of the things. It plays a lot of different roles in the body. It's the only system that touches all of the other systems. So I've been very fascinated over the last 12, 13 years to figure out how to optimize the health of this tissue, because it then optimizes the health of all of your other systems.
Okay, got you. So you said it's connected to everything. And so in my mind, for some reason, I was thinking like fascia was just like specifically around like a group of muscles and like maybe separated from each other. But rather you're saying like it's entirely connected throughout your entire body.
Yes. Yeah, so I've heard before people thought it was like a sausage casing around the muscle, but it's really this crisscrossing spider web, layer on layer on layer of plastic wrap. It's like a three-dimensional plastic wrap suit that you wear on the inside.
Wow. Okay. Now, this is, okay, so just to give a little bit of my background in terms of fascia and my understanding of it, like definitely I do remember some from like taking anatomy and physiology, but rather hearing more of it in my yogic practices and kind of doing deeper stretching to, you know, hold a pose for a specific amount of time to really start to work into the fascia. But I don't really feel like I have a super strong understanding of it. And also this idea of storing trauma in the fascia was a very interesting topic for me, because I don't know, it was a very hard, it's almost like hard to correlate the two. So I'm wondering, like, how is it that trauma actually makes its way into fascia, and why in the fascia, and why not into like our muscles or something along those lines?
Sure. So we think about, we can go back to that plastic wrap suit analogy. Within that plastic wrap suit are free nerve endings and proprioceptors, which are the small receptors that many people are familiar with, that they play a role in your balance or your coordination, which is absolutely true. But they do so much more than that. They are taking in information constantly about your internal environment and your external environment and communicating that within itself. I know this is a different tangent, but the fascial system actually communicates outside of the nervous system. It can communicate within just itself and then respond to whatever information or stimulus it's getting, very similar to the nervous system. And of course, they do talk to each other. But fascia has been called the most highly sensory organ that we have. And so if it's taking in all of this information about your external or internal environment and responds to, again, stress, anxiety, maybe an actual physical trauma that you've had, that information is passing through your fascial system. And what happens a lot of the time is that prolonged traumatic experiences or something ultra traumatic, the fascia will start to lock down and become constricted and stuck in that contracted state, thinking that it's protecting you from whatever threat might be out there. So if you have, again, if you have a stressful job, you've been through some trauma in your life, your fascia is essentially like the paper that your life story is written on. So if you've got a lot of tension, a lot of chronic pain, some feelings of just being dense or heavy, or you feel like you're getting injured all the time, there's a lot of signs that fascia might be stuck in that contracted state, but they're absolutely correlated with each other.
It's super wild to me. And also just when people are releasing the trauma from like the fascial work that they're doing is really wild to see that it's literally almost like an emotion is stored in that little piece of your body. And just by, you know, working in that area, you're able to release that from the body, which I can only imagine is very liberating. Have you ever done breath work before? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Like a holotropic style, like the three-part breathing. Okay. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had any of the, what do they call it? Like petney, where your hands start to kind of cramp up and all that?
Yep, yeah. Yeah. Definitely experienced that.
I get the quads every single time. But one time I did experience where I was just going through the breath and I like kept going and kept going and kept going. And I decided like I was just going to push past the point in which I'd stopped before. And my calves like completely clenched up, almost like a cramp. And so it was very interesting. I was like, I don't know if that was like an area of trauma, you know, that like was just, and that's what they say is sometimes when you're breathing into your body, like it can trigger areas where there might be some trauma stored. But it's also interesting. I don't know. Do you know if that would have been like doing that deep breath? Does that get into the fascial network or is it like something completely different?
I mean, it could definitely be related. Unfortunately, we don't get to pick where we store trauma in the body. I've heard many times before people get really attached to the idea that trauma is stored in the hips, which it absolutely can be. And I've seen it happen just about everywhere in the body between working on clients, but I've experienced it for myself. You know, the first time I ever had an emotional release, it was in the side of my neck in this upper SEM area. And it was so gentle. It didn't hurt at all. And as I started moving and working through this tissue, tears were just falling out of my face. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I don't know why I'm crying. It doesn't hurt. And had to be, you know, brought into the idea that this can happen. Sometimes when you finally pull pieces apart of something that's been stuck for a really long time and there's some type of energy that's stuck in there, it just comes out and you don't always have to know what it is or why it's there. But I've had emotional releases in breath work as well, where suddenly we change the style of breathing. And then I'm like, hold on, I need to cry apparently for 15 seconds. And then we move on.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a very interesting process, both breath work and working with the fascia. How can you tell where a part of your body would need some release? Like,
Are you able to actually just look or feel on your body? Or maybe if you try to like do a stretch and you feel a little bit of tension or pain, like how do you know if you have an area that needs to be released?
Yeah, well, if you're super weird and obsessed with fascia like me, I can see it on everyone. I can usually see it from what their posture is doing. But even to the average person, right, if you see someone that is really hunched over, they've got rounded forward shoulders and their head's down a little bit, that's likely not the most confident person ever, right? Like that person has probably got some other things going on. So fascia can be very representative of our emotions or how we're feeling in general in life. So you might take a look at your posture and see what's happening there. You might have a lot of constriction around your heart space in the chest that's literally rounding you forward. However, mostly any type of pain, like if you've got any aches and pains, even ones that you're convinced are from simply getting old, that's my like biggest pet peeve when people are like, oh, well, my back hurts in the morning, but it's just because I'm getting old.
So are you pretty much saying like getting older is not an excuse? You can essentially live your entire life pretty much, I mean, for a majority of the time, like pain-free, would you say?
Oh, 100%. So there is a natural part of the aging process, which is that we become more dehydrated. We have less water in our tissue. So it does mean that we need to work a little bit harder to restore more fluid and keep that process of hyaluronic acid being produced in our body and such. But yeah, everything is wrapped in fascia. So therefore, the position and function of everything is influenced by fascia. So even if you think you have a structural problem, that you have a disc-related problem, or you have a nerve-related problem, it's actually a fascia problem. So if you have really any type of pain, whether that's tendonitis to pinched nerves, it's a fascia-related problem. So that's a big indicator. I guess any type of mobility issue is also an indicator. If you're really struggling with range of motion in your squats, or you don't feel like you can lift your hands above your head as high as you used to, that is also just a result of fascia slowly becoming restricted over time.
Is it that the fascia is becoming like rigid and dense or shortening? Like what is it that's usually the cause here? Like what are we trying to like work on, the lengthening or the, you know, rather the like smoothing it back out? Like what would be the process there?
That's a really great question, because we could actually go down a whole rabbit hole of debating whether or not fascia can truly be released in the lengthening sense. But what happens is fascia can become rigid, like you were saying, or dehydrated. So most of the time when we're talking about fascia, you know, quote unquote release, we're really talking about rehydrating and re-texturizing the fascia in that area.
Gotcha. Yeah. And you had touched on the rehydration as well, and like hyaluronic acid. So obviously drink water, right? But in terms of like, aside from just drinking water, because I'm sure it goes deeper than that, like what's the best way in which we can really get hydration into the fascia, the muscles, as well? You mentioned hyaluronic acid, like for example, is it a good idea to supplement with that? Like what would be the best practice there?
So we've talked mostly for the sake of being able to visualize it about this fibrous part of fascia, which, you know, it's made up of collagen and elastin fibers, but actually a huge part of our fascia lays between those fibers in the form of extracellular fluid. So we have a very specialized structured water that's in our fascia, and that's what really deeply hydrates all of our tissues. It's what allows our muscles and joints to glide. And hyaluron is present in the extracellular matrix, in this extracellular fluid. So just by keeping our fascia hydrated, we're already helping with that production of hyaluronic acid and just keeping everything in that more slippery state. I guess it can be like a bunch of oil between those layers of plastic wrap. Extracellular fluid is what's allowing all of that gliding to happen. Fascia, though, is essentially it's a water irrigation system. So all of that water that we already have in it, you can look at it under a microscope. You can see the drops of water being transported to all of these areas of our body. And the only way that we can really have that happen is through one, movement. So unfortunately, if you are only adding another Nalgene at your desk at work that you're drinking every day, you're not actually helping yourself become more hydrated. You're only giving yourself an excuse to go to the bathroom every 30 minutes. Movement is such a key part to get that water through the fascial system and actually moving towards the places that you need it. So movement is huge. But secondly, you may need to actually release those areas of fascia. So if you think about a crumpled up ball of plastic wrap, if you dumped a bottle of water over it, we're not really going to get that water to that inside area that's super tight and crumpled up. So through fascia release, as we start to unstick all those layers that are stuck and retexturize that area, now the water can actually get to where we want it to go. So it's definitely a twofold answer.
It kind of almost makes me think of like the lymphatic system, right? Where you have to move your body to really help the lymphatic system move as well, right? Does it have its own like pump system? So I feel like there's got to be some kind of correlation there. But yeah, just in general, movement is such a medicinal practice to for everything, right? But I guess as well with lubricating the body, which I always it's a tough one when someone gets injured or they're dealing with a pain of some kind, you know, and the one thing that they don't want to do is move, right? They like they're bedridden or they're even rather told to stay bedridden, whether by a medical professional or not. And I think to a degree that is necessary, right? Depending on the injury. But at the same time, like, for example, and we can get into this, but like sciatic pain, right? A lot of the times sciatic pain can be so painful. People have trouble even standing up, getting out of bed, whatever it might be. But at the end of the day, you have to move and strengthen the body, you know, work into the areas that you have that pain to really get past that. So yeah, and sorry, I'm just going to leave it there with the sciatic because I'm sure you can go on it. And I want to hear a lot on that. So take it away. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we don't have 10 hours to talk about the bad advice that the medical system gives out. And, you know, I truly understand what it's like to have a horrible pain that makes you feel like you shouldn't be moving. You know, I've experienced low back pain and knee pain and neck pain in my life, amongst other things. It's just like, it's just a part of life. Pain happens, right? But yes, I really, truly believe this diagnosis of, oh, this thing is injured. So now rest. You need to rest to make this better. Unless you've had a really significant impact trauma, like a car accident or a fall, a mountain bike crash, something like that. Usually movement is absolutely the thing you need to be doing, even with sciatica. Now, the thing I'll say about that, though, is you're likely experiencing that pain due to a rotation in the pelvis, some fascial tension in different areas of the legs. So you might want to release fascia in these spots before you go do whatever activity you like to do, whether it's just walking or going to the gym, to help minimize the pain so that it allows you to do more movement, for sure.
Yeah, and I think I'd heard you saying earlier as well that just because you feel a pain in one area of your body doesn't necessarily mean that's the area that needs the work done, right? Like we were talking about plantar fasciitis as well as with the sciatic pain. Like I know some people actually, I was speaking with someone just like a week ago and they were feeling pain like right in the Achilles tendon, right? And it's like, yeah, you might think to, okay, just work around the calf or, you know, like just slightly above it or below it, whatever, maybe down into the heel. But rather, you're kind of saying that that might not be where it stems from. And rather, you know, being that the body's so connected, it might be further up the line. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. Where we feel pain is almost never the problem, which I understand can be a bummer at times because it's common sense that we're like, oh, my back hurts. I need to go roll out my back or stretch my back, whatever that is. I totally understand that that's what makes the most sense. But our body is a system of pulleys with the fascial system that all ideally are balanced. They have the same amount of tension front to back, side to side. They're all working and sliding together. So when something starts to get like a little crinkled up ball of plastic wrap, it starts to pull something in a different direction. And usually where something gets overstretched or where a muscle begins working way too hard as a compensation, that's the area that hurts. But that's not the actual root cause of the pain. That's that crumpled up ball of plastic wrap somewhere else is what you actually need to go find. So, man, plantar fasciitis, that's such a great example. I've worked with, hundreds probably at this point of people with plantar fasciitis that are always blown away that we can get rid of it without even touching their foot, because it's not a foot problem. As soon as you release that posterior chain, especially up in the hamstrings or glutes, that's a huge area. Or if they likely have an imbalance in the hips, that, you know, fascial tension discrepancy between both sides. And as soon as you balance that out, the plantar fasciitis goes away. It's the same with sciatic and low back pain. I think it's the running joke in Denver is I'm some kind of wizard because I keep releasing something seemingly random and it takes away pain, but it's like, it actually makes a lot of sense once you know where to look for it.
And for example, what area of the body would you say tends to be where a lot of the issues stem from? Would it be the hips?
The pelvis certainly causes a lot of issues. You know, largely none of us are moving the way our bodies were intended, myself included. As active as we all are, you know, you could go to the gym every day a week, but if you're sitting at a desk for 8 hours and then you sit on the couch and watch Netflix all night, that's not taking your body through a lot of different ranges of motions and different types of movement. So that the pelvis absolutely gets affected by that. But a pattern I've seen over and over with body, plantar fasciitis is not necessarily a great example, but the idea that the opposite area of where you're feeling pain tends to be one of the main culprits. So if you have a lot of upper back and neck pain, it's likely that the chest and the front of the neck is actually the area that's super tight. Or if you have a pain right in the center of your knee, it's likely the back of the calf and hamstring contributing to that pain. So I see that so commonly throughout all different kinds of areas in the body, looking for that opposite area as the root cause.
Yeah. And also you had mentioned like hunched over shoulders and stuff. That actually, I mean, I don't have it largely, but I do have it to a degree. And even in high school, I had went to a chiropractor and he had mentioned it. And he was kind of mentioning that it could also be from, you know, doing mainly like bench press as opposed to, you know, flat pulls or something along those lines to kind of balance that. But what's really like, obviously, I'm guessing both muscle and fascia could play a role there. Is fascia always kind of reacting to trauma, or is it also like through working out, can we make it dense and immobile and kind of crumpled up like you'd mentioned?
Yeah, another contributor to fascia becoming more unhealthy in certain areas is repetitive patterns. So I've worked with a lot of, you know, professional athletes and even recreational athletes over the years where they're really into a certain type of sport. And while they're very high level and they're very good at this thing, they end up having pain or mobility problems because they're using the same muscles in the same way over and over and over again. So, you know, a CrossFit athlete, maybe they're doing hundreds of squats over the course of a week's time. Maybe for you, if you did bench press every single time you went into the gym, fascia wants to actually help us. It's going to start to change and mold into the shape it thinks that you need to perform whatever motions you're doing the most often. So if you're doing a lot of bench press, the tissue might have started to shorten to get you in a better position to be just pushing if it wasn't being balanced enough with a pulling motion, something like that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so pretty much doing like a full range of motion, switching it up, like really trying to kind of like, yeah, essentially do movements that your body doesn't always do is probably a really great idea to kind of open the body up then.
Oh yeah, 100%. It's tough. We're all creatures of habit, and it's easier to go to the gym and do the same types of things every time. But yeah, our body's not made to do 500 squats in a week's time, like, you know, at 80% of your max for time, whatever. I'm not anti-CrossFit. It's just an example. You know, I've worked with a lot of baseball players and tennis players and people that they're throwing with the same arm or they're swinging in the same way over and over again. It really that's a more dynamic sport, but it's still, it's the repetition of the same movement over and over again that starts to get you.
Yeah. And it makes sense. I mean, it's also one of those things where you can't always base everything off of this, but if you did just try to take an ancestral kind of look at things too, it is like, who the heck would have been squatting 500 times a day, right? With like 80 or, you know, do it 80% max, like, you know, it would have been very like, okay, maybe you killed an animal and you have to carry it back, right? And like, okay, you're going to get some squats and whatnot in there. But yeah, so I like to try to put it in terms of like the ancestral standpoint, just because obviously biology takes a while to catch up with our lifestyle and we're going exceedingly fast at that. But yeah, so on that note though, what would be some of the just like the basic day-to-day stuff that we can really do to either avoid our fascia kind of getting this crumpled or dense, locations in body, in parts of our body? Or what are some of the simple things that we could do? Like, is it foam rolling? Is it stretching? And does stretching, because you mentioned there's a debate even on the lengthening, right? So like, how effective is stretching even with releasing the fascia? Sorry, I gave you like a multi-part question there. So take whatever you want from that.
So many things to answer. Evan, I'm not a fan of stretching, like the classic static stretching that we're all used to. I don't think there's a lot of very good evidence, especially when it comes to pain around stretching. But again, when you're stretching, let's say, for example, your hamstrings, because we've all done it. Our hamstrings feel tight, we throw a leg up on a higher surface and we just crank forward on the hamstring. If that area is super tight, fascially speaking, and we have these crumpled up balls of plastic wrap throughout multiple layers through, you know, the muscle all the way down to the bone, we're not able to pull out the wrinkles through just a one plane stretch. We have to be able to get in some cross-fibering motions and more active movement for anything to truly change in our fascia. And so oftentimes, cranking out a stretch over and over again, I've seen it increase people's pain a lot of the time. So if we go back to the plantar fasciitis example, if you're just putting your foot up on a wall and cranking forward on your calf, I've seen that actually worsen plantar fasciitis over time. But as soon as you release fascia properly in the calf, that makes a very positive difference. So I'm just not really a fan of the static stretching. I think it can work over time possibly, but it's also going to take so much longer to get the result that I think we're all looking for. So something super simple that you absolutely could do is do more movement, even if that just means tilting your head from side to side at your desk, nodding up and down, you know, rolling your circles, reaching up above your head, doing little twists. Like, there's a lot of movement things that you can do, even if you are required to do a lot of sitting throughout your day. Any type of movement you do is going to help that water get through your fascial system more effectively. But as is my obsession for the last 10 plus years, I'm all about releasing fascia in a very specific way. And that combination is through compression and active movement. And I do that with either a foam roller or, you know, various tools that most people are probably already familiar with, like any type of massage, little round or lacrosse ball. I've used all those different tools before and then just used it more as a tool for the compression and movement instead of simply rolling or holding on a spot.
Yeah, you were saying that through your practice, you've kind of like, you started doing things and then later you kind of find out like what it was that you were even doing in the first place, right? What were some of those things?
Yeah, I mean, we can backtrack a little bit. We haven't talked much about how I got into this work. So I was born with nerve damage. That was very significant. I had a massive nerve regrowth surgery when I was only 4 months old. I grew up going through the standard Western medicine system runaround, which is, you know, going from practitioner to practitioner, doctor to doctor, continually told that nothing could be done about this tension and lack of sensation and mobility and all of these things that were still causing problems with my arm. And I was still on the hunt for something that might make a difference. But it seemed like, you know, for the first 23 years of my life, I laid on hundreds of tables for treatments by experts. I tried every tool that you could think of. I went and did, you know, anything I thought might make a difference, but nothing seemed to make a lasting difference until I moved from Cincinnati to Boulder in 2011 and met a lady that did a type of fascia release work that I'd never heard of. And it was all about this compression of a spot and then having, you know, you as the person getting compressed actively move through a range of motion. And I saw more results in the feel and function of my arm in 3 months than I had in 23 years of doing other things, and was like, holy crap, if this is able to make a dent in what was supposed to be a completely irrevocable issue, what can this do for the average pain or for everyone else? Or what else can this do? So I immediately got very obsessed with fascia, started doing this type of fascia release, and, you know, even learned a few more different modalities over the years. And as more fascia research comes out, we start learning about things like a fascia site, which only gets activated through shearing or cross-fibering of tissue. And when that cell gets activated, that's what really starts that process of hyaluronic acid being produced, which is, again, that full body grease for our muscles and our joints. It even adds a little padding and cushioning for our joints. So that was cool to be like, oh, well, when I'm compressing something for someone and having them move actively, we're actively cross-fibering all of these different directions of the fascia. And so there's things like that where as I learn more and more about it, I'm like, oh, this is why this is working so well. Or they'll, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with Thomas Myers and all of his research about anatomy trains, but once I saw all of these interconnected lines in the fascia, I was like, oh, that's why when I work on this area, it really reduces or straight up eliminates this pain. So it's been a cool journey to see as more and more research comes out, how that aligns with what I'm doing. Although there is the other side that it seems like the more we learn about fascia, the more mysterious it gets. It's like it does the coolest things and we're only hitting what I feel is the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wow. There's a lot I can go off of on that. But I first off want to say, as a kid dealing with a lot of gastrointestinal issues, it was a similar kind of like runaround, I would say, at the, you know, at the doctor's office, where it's just kind of like, I don't know, I feel like maybe they just didn't have the knowledge beyond like what they were telling me, you know, which was essentially that like, hey, you probably have like lactose intolerance, maybe you have irritable bowel syndrome, like, you know, we're not really sure, and you're probably just going to live with this for the rest of your life, you know. And as a kid, I mean, like, you kind of take it to heart because you're like, oh my God, for life. Like, oh, it's like you just kind of embody it and go from there. But Sean Stevenson, he has a really good podcast, and he mentions because he dealt with like he broke a hip when he was like 19. He broke his hip when he was like 19 and had the spine of like an 80-year-old. And the doctors are telling him like there's nothing he can do. And he just mentions the fact of the nocebo as opposed to the placebo, right? Which, for those of you who don't know, the nocebo is like, you know, just as telling someone with a placebo that, hey, if we give you this medication, like, you're going to get better. Well, the nocebo is the opposite of that. It's like, take this and you're going to get worse, or you're going to have side effects. And so he was just kind of mentioning like how what's being said to you at that age, like, especially, yeah, or at any age, when someone tells you that, like, hey, there is no cure for this, like, you're just not going to get better, like, that's already defeating you in the mind. So I really like commend you on pushing and like continuing to try to find an outlet, you know, and it's led you to here as well, which is really amazing. So yeah, like, kudos to you on that.
Thanks. I would say one of the more challenging aspects of this journey has been getting my mind to fully accept the positive changes that are still happening. So I'm still on my journey. I still have to work on my arm just because my condition was extra severe. But I wonder actually how much is still mental, because yeah, when someone of authority that should know what they're talking about, or you assume that they know what they're talking about, says something like, hey, you are going to have this for the rest of your life. This is never going to get better. That's a very serious thing to tell someone, no matter what age. You know, you and I were both kids, which maybe we're even extra vulnerable then. But that kind of stuff sinks in, and the mind-body connection is very powerful. And if your mind truly believes that there's nothing you can do and there's no way for you to heal, your body will likely follow suit. So I definitely recognize there are ways that I'm still working on that. It is a challenge when you've been working on something that you've had no answers for a really long time.
Yeah. And sorry to go back to your hand as well. Would you just not feel like sensations in your hand? Well, like what was the nerve damage like causing, like in a tangible sense?
So it vastly limited my range of motion. So I couldn't lift my arm up over my head. I had a real tough time straightening my elbow out, pronating my arm, and using my hand for things. But if we're really going to go down the mental side of this, I think being told that, you know, that there was damage and there was nothing I could do about it, I'm not sure what was a true lack of sensation and what was me just completely disconnecting from that side of my body. So I really feel like I pretended that arm didn't exist. And so I didn't use it for anything. It was very tucked in at my side. And it took me a while to get out of that phase of like, no, this moves now. Muscles are firing now. I had, you know, a lot of emotional releases on this side. Like there was just so many incredible things that fascia release was able to offer that I was like, oh, wow, I have to get my mind wrapped around the changes that are happening so fast with my body.
Yeah. Yeah. I do a little bit of foam rolling here and there, but I'm very interested to go deeper into kind of your work and to see what else I can try to do on myself or find a practitioner as well. But do you feel like a lot of people who come into your practice come in because they have a trauma, like they're going there specifically for trauma, or do you think they're going there more so for like the actual release of the fascia and like they're dealing with the pain, or is it like a 50-50 mix there?
Yeah, I have a pretty eclectic mix of people that I've been working with. I would say far and away pain is the reason that people come in to begin with. But I've started getting more and more people looking to get more connected to their body and release trauma. I've certainly had more of those people in the last couple years. It can be a little bit more challenging simply because, you know, we can't choose the time and place that we'll have an emotional release or what the process is really going to look like. But I do really believe that one of the fastest ways to the mind is through the body. So it's a very interesting and different approach. But mostly people are coming for pain. And it's a passion of mine to help people really understand why they're experiencing whatever it is that they're experiencing. Because as soon as you know what that root cause is or what are the main contributors, you can do this on your own. I don't want people to need me forever. I'm a great resource as a way to kickstart the process with some really powerful compression and, you know, the intelligence of knowing where most of these patterns may live. But I mean, I myself, I've had knee pain, low back pain, and neck pain over the years that I've gotten rid of myself with foam rolling in a matter of days because I know what I'm releasing and where I should go. And so that is the greatest compliment that I receive is I'll hear from a client after 6 months and they're like, oh my gosh, you know, that knee pain that I had came back for one day and I went and rolled those places that I know are tight on me and now it's totally gone after a day. And I'm like, that's it. That's the thing, is just being able to understand our bodies and knowing that it's not so mysterious or it's not really as complicated as we think. You know, I think we all want to think we're some kind of medical unicorn, myself included. It was like, well, that couldn't possibly work for me because I have 3 degenerated discs and a herniation at the top. Yeah, you know, whatever your excuse is, but it's like, it really works when you know where to go. And that's absolutely something that I hope for you. I hope it'll be fun to dive into and just get to know your own body and know how to quickly address anything that might come up.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that because I'm definitely still new in the field of fascia. So this has been like an absolutely eye-opening talk and experience for me. So I appreciate you bearing with me here on my three-part, four-part questions. And so I know you mentioned that you do have some resources that people can access, but like, I guess just at the most basic level, someone who is dealing with a pain, do you have a general recommendation of like, hey, you know, you want to look at the muscles kind of above the area that's giving you pain, or, you know, obviously like avoiding, I don't know, major joints, like not putting a ton of pressure, like straight on your spine or something along those lines. But do you have general recommendations that someone can just literally brand new to fascia and foam rolling, like what they could start trying?
You know, you could keep it as simple as like, if you're experiencing a lower body problem, start with releasing areas of the lower body. The caveat would be, I actually don't really recommend that you do foam rolling on your lower back. I think you'll find that releasing other areas in the lower body have a much more significant and positive effect than actually rolling on the back. Those vertebrae are more fragile than they seem. Or if you have an upper body issue, you could start releasing areas of the upper body that are near. You know, we talked about that opposites connection where, yeah, is the pain in the back of your body? See if you can release something on the front of your body or vice versa. The other recommendation would be rolling on your roller is not really going to be super effective. So whatever you're releasing, you want to find an area that feels tender or sore, because healthy fascia doesn't hurt. So you're specifically looking for an area that feels very tight. And then you're going to keep that compression wherever you're working and move your body a little bit. So let's take the quads, for example. If you lay with your quads on a roller in a plank position, we've all done the just kind of pulling ourselves up and down with the muscle fibers. Instead of doing that, simply pause on a spot on your quads that feels very sore, and then bend and straighten your knees, kind of like you're doing a hamstring curl. You can even keep your knees bent and then rock your heels side to side. So now your quad is going to cross fiber over the roller instead of going with the grain of the muscle. Again, that cross fibering aspect is very important. So you don't have to overcomplicate it. Maybe I'm making it sound more complicated.
No,
but
no, you're not.
Whatever you're holding, just move your, whether it's your shoulder, your elbow, your knee, just move something nearby. You're going to get a much better result than you will if you're simply rolling up and down and back and forth on the same spot.
No, that's excellent advice. And I was going to mention the IT band. Like, that's always an area that is very, like, it could be very tender. So yeah, I've definitely rolled out, but I did the first version you mentioned where it was like just the rolling and rather not, or maybe I've sat on a spot that, oh, it did hurt and like just kind of held it there, but I've never like utilized my body to like really find some movement in that space that is like feeling the pain.
Yeah. The active movement component is so important. We've got to bring in the brain if we want to interrupt these poor movement patterns or to interrupt this pattern that the fascia is stuck in. And we live in a world where most of our options are very passive. We just lay on a table and have someone else do something to us, or, you know, we're just Theragunning the ever-living crap out of our low back or whatever it is. Those aren't going to make the changes that you'll get when you move your body yourself. That was what was so life-changing for the nerve damage in my arm. Everything I had tried up until that point, I realized was largely passive, and that active movement was so important. But yes, I mean, the IT bands, I will say, they're often very intense. And so if the intensity is above, let's say, a 7 for any part of your body, for that matter, it's totally fine to throw, a yoga mat over your roller or wrap your whole roller in a yoga mat. But there is this little dance that you'll play between, hey, this is very sore and I can tell my fascia needs work here. And also, it's not about beating your body into submission. So please, if you're trying this on your own, know that you don't need to push through something that's an 8, 9, 10 out of 10 on the intensity scale, especially the IT bands. It's more important that our body is on board with the changes that you want to make. So we want to keep that intensity at a 6 or 7 at its maximum.
Yeah, getting rid of the trauma, not creating more of it, right?
Right. Yeah. If you've got a scrunch face and you can't move through the range of motion and you're not able to breathe through your diaphragm, that's a sign, friends. You know, you really don't have to do this to yourself.
Yeah. But
bring it down. And honestly, the more consistently you do it, I think you'll be surprised on how quick the intensity goes down, especially releasing fascia in this specific way. It tends to create more change and lasting change that will bring the intensity down pretty quick.
Yeah. You mentioned Theragun. Theragun's good, bad. Any ideas?
Well, I think Theraguns are really great for muscle recovery, which is how I imagine they were originally intended. If you're using it as a tool for pain, you're going to be disappointed. Most of you probably know what I'm talking about. So if it's something you have to keep returning to every night, it's because you're not actually on the root cause of your pain. So Theragun has a certain vibration that floods the spinal cord with stimuli that will actually close these little gates that send the pain signal to your brain. It's called gate control theory. And so it temporarily just overwhelms your spinal cord with that stimuli. And so it shuts down your pain receptors for a time. If you Theragun your back and you're like, oh, wow, that really helped my lower back, but you have to go right back to it the next night or a couple times a day, it's because you're really just blocking the pain signal and you're not addressing the root cause. So I certainly would say it's a tool of pain management. And who wants to manage pain? Let's just eliminate it entirely, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, and also getting to the root cause and not just throwing a Band-Aid on the symptom, right? Like, we want to actually fix this. We don't want to just make it so that it's livable for the rest of our lives. So all about getting to the root cause, which largely is getting to the fascia and getting into and doing that work. So that's amazing. Julia, we are pretty much at the end of our show here. I want to open up the floor for you to just kind of share where people can, you know, connect with you. Ways in which they can learn from you as well. Obviously, your knowledge is super vast when it comes to fascia, and I'm personally excited to hear about more of this because I'm going to be checking it out. But also just from me personally, thank you so much for also coming on the show. It's been a pleasure. And I had mentioned to you earlier, like, I've been wanting to learn more about fascia, and divine intervention just decided to drop you here. So I love it. And thank you. So please take the floor.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So I'm the most active on Instagram, I would say. So you can follow me, come say hi. And my handle is at Movement by Julia. If you're curious on learning more how to do the type of foam rolling that I'm talking about, I also have a free video series called Unlock Your Hips that lives on my website, which is movementbyjulia.com. So really excited for you to try it and feel the difference for yourself. I've gotten lots of messages about what just 3 days can do when you're releasing fascia correctly. So definitely check it out. And Evan, thanks so much. I was excited to be on here and talk to you about this too.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And just thank you for also spreading all of this knowledge and helping so many people to live pain-free. That's a huge thing and very commemorable. So thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. All righty, y'all. You guys know the deal. It is do everything with good intentions, connect to your elements. Julia, thank you so much. Have a beautiful rest of your day, y'all.
This podcast is for educational purposes only. It is not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or other qualified medical professional. Evan Roberts is not a medical professional, and this podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. Statements and views expressed on this show are not medical advice. This podcast, including Evan Roberts and any guests on the show, disclaims responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained in this episode. If you think you have a medical problem, please consult a medical professional. Thank you.